This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ravens out on the practice field for training camp today. Adisa Isaac is finally out there. Deontay Hardy is out there. Our new wide receiver, Russell Gage, is out there, which makes it a perfect time to head out there with our guy, Jason Lockett-Four, who is out there at training camp. And Jason, thanks so much for giving us some of your valuable time. Let's start with this. Did they roll out the red carpet for you?
I just signed a the lengths to which the Ravens bent over backwards to welcome me, but let's just say it was beyond sufficient. And please never, ever, ever thank me for talking to you two Jamokes. I do it gladly and always from the bottom of my heart.
Wow. You're a giver, man.
He's tender, locking for him.
Damn right, Bone. Hey, while I was on hold, I got to say this, Bone. If I were you, I would talk to Chuck Bucks. I think you're third in all those promos. I think we need to mix the order up. I think sometimes it needs to say inside access with the Bone and Gigi and Jason Lockett-Four.
Yeah, mix up the order.
I'm putting down what I'm throwing out there, Bone? I'm picking up what you're putting down.
By the way,
you don't need to be the caboose all the time.
Hey, by the way, before we get to real stuff, since we're talking nonsense, I realized something today while we had Buck Martinez on. We had Buck Showalter on yesterday. Buck Martinez today. Correct. I have now tasked Bone with getting Bucks the rest of the week. We're doing an impromptu Buckapalooza.
I'm trying, man. Wait. I have Buck Williams' number.
Buck Britton.
I just put out a request in Norfolk.
Yes.
Buck Dharma. Isn't the lead singer of Blue Oyster Cult Buck Dharma?
I do not have his number.
I will take your word for it.
Your list, Bone.
Yeah. I do not have his number.
But he's working on it.
BlueOysterCult.com. Maybe you can get to their management.
Yeah.
Well, Jason,
Uncle Buck, R.I.P. John Candy.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
We know that you love practice. You love being at practice. Anything catch your eye thus far?
To echo, I think what we've heard from our many guests who've called in from practice, the defense certainly is at times having its way with the offense. I'm not positive of what I'm allowed to say and not allowed to say. Let's just say the composition of the first team offensive line is a little hard scrabble right now. And so they had an early goal line session. They had some other inside running sessions, and they weren't exactly, I would say, holding their own. Derrick Henry did bust an inside zone run and cut it back. And he made some hay. But that was more of a deep red zone run. But the inside stuff, the short yardage stuff, was pretty one-sided. The story here is they're down three first-round draft picks, right? Like, always not practicing. Payton's not practicing. Linderbaum's not practicing. Lamar, the deep balls, the nine routes down the sidelines, misconnect with Zay. Henry ran a wheel route, took it upfield, wide open, overthrew him. It's pretty kind of, I would say, scattershot. Lamar looks like a guy who's missed some time. It looks like a group up front that hasn't played together because it really hasn't. So those were sort of, some of the highlights or lowlights, depending on your purview.
We've talked a lot about Josh Johnson, Jason. Has he looked as you'd expect him to look?
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how much he plays Friday night. I would think a decent amount. I would imagine there's a decent chance that he's starting left tackle. Because, again, I don't think Ronnie Stanley's going to do much. And my guess, Ken, and it would just be a guess, not even necessarily related to anything I may or may not have seen today, but my guess is big number 74 might get a chance to run with the ones there at left tackle. They've got, you know, some of their other younger offensive linemen seem to have their hands full manning a couple of other positions that I don't believe I'm at a liberty to disclose.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to expect that we see a fair amount of him, and I'll be really interested to see. The Eagles have a pretty deep defensive line group, and, you know, they've invested some draft capital in recent years. And I'll be interested to see if they let some of their big dogs hunt for a series or two, because that will be quite a test for this group of Ravens offensive linemen.
Jason, any one-on-ones jump out to you? I know a lot of people talked about Isaiah Likely, Kyle Hamilton going at it a lot this camp. Any of those matchups jump out?
Not really, Bone. You know, Stevens, you know, on Zay Flowers a few times was able to break things up. But again, those weren't super high percentage passes. I mean, it's Zay Flowers down the sideline with not a whole lot of room to spare. There haven't been many reps, one-on-one reps between O-lineman and D-lineman, which I really wanted to get a look-see. There haven't been any of those. Now, they may be going on right now. I'm around the corner talking to you guys. But to this point, even though everybody's in full pads and helmets, we have not seen those guys engaging with each other. There were some 7-on-7 drills. Again, I'd say the defense, by and large, got the better of that. Anything downfield was either overthrown or broken up. And, you know, it was just a lot of checkdowns when they did complete passes.
Jason, weeks ago we did a segment on veteran wide receivers the team could bring in. Bone mm-hmm. hit us with a deep cut, Russell Gage, at the time. Well, the Ravens signed Russell Gage today. He missed all of last season with an injury. Just your reaction to Russell Gage there.
Yeah, I mean, look, is it a coincidence that he's here the day after Bateman goes down? I'm guessing not. We'll see, you know, how revealing Harbs is going to be about anything going on with Bateman or any of these other guys who are banged up. But he had a season where he had 800 receiving yards, like a couple years ago, 4 or 5 touchdowns with Tampa. He's a veteran guy. He's been in a bunch of systems. I think he's useful right now. Watching them today, and again, it's not like I've been out here all the time, so maybe these guys were already doing a lot of stuff with some of the starters. But, like, you know, Malik Cunningham, Tylon Wallace, Devontae Walker, like those guys were getting some meaningful reps with the ones. So, I don't know. I'll probably be barred from here from life, huh? Have I already said too much?
Watch your back.
But yes, I mean, why not, right? I you can never have too much depth. And at this point, even going into this first game, they might not want to have some of these kids playing a ton. Now, look, Russell Gage was involved in this practice. I don't know how close he would be to being able to play on Friday, but certainly wide receiver, edge, you know, offensive line, those are areas where they could certainly still, strongly consider adding some guys who have at least played in this league, even if it's more of a journeyman than an impact guy.
Well,
also, one other thing I should have mentioned before, flags galore.
Oh.
Flags galore. A lot of them holding, a lot of them seemingly procedural. So, again, a lot of offensive linemen running laps, I'll put it to you that way.
Well, we opened the show with this, Jason, and you're talking about needing more on the edge, maybe more on the offensive line. Out of those two position groups, which group are you more confident in?
Well, I don't know about the extent of this OA injury, Bone, so it's hard, you know what I mean? It's hard for me to say. Right now,
Did we lose?
I think we've said this forever. I think they need a tackle who's played in the league. Like, I think they may be a tackle short. Well, again, these preseason games will go a long way to deciding that. And for me, edge has been the biggest issue with this team forever. So I can't put anything in front of edge. Like, I think $5 million for Ogba would have made all the sense in the world. I don't think there's a lot there. Like, I've kept a pretty close eye on Ajabo. Again, this is not a practice where they were doing a ton of one-on-one reps. where I'm watching, you know, this move, that move, the other. He did draw a holding penalty at one point, but you know, he was on the ground a few times. Like, it doesn't look particularly fluid or confident right now. So Van Noy's not going to play in these games,
no.
Right? Oway certainly not going to play. I mean, Oway, even if this is a nothing burger, he's definitely not playing Friday. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if, you know, by they return to practice on Sunday or Monday, maybe there's some other veteran of some caliber added to the group of outside linebackers/D linemen.
Before I let you go, I got to get your reaction on all this Brandon Ayuk stuff that's going on right now. What's your read? Like, the 49ers have come out and said they've got deals in place with the Browns and the Patriots, but he doesn't want to go to Ayuk does not want to go to the Browns or the Patriots. Where are we headed with this?
Well, I think they've put it all out there through their local media because they're calling his bluff, you know. They think that he really does want to still be there. And they think ultimately that he'll capitulate and cave. I think he's gone too far and he's got to just take the money somewhere and be done with it. He would much rather be in Washington or Pittsburgh. You know, people, again, connected to the 49ers, getting their or information from the 49ers, would tell you that those ships have sailed. I would say it ain't over till it's over. But if you were him, right, would you want to be in New England or Cleveland if you cared at all about winning and you were part of an organization that's done nothing but compete for Super Bowls since you got there? But you also can't have your cake and eat it too. So I think ultimately money talks and he's just going to have to suck it up and go somewhere. But I know he would like to see a scenario where the Commanders or the Steelers juice the pot enough in terms of what they're willing to give up to try to get the 49ers to send him there. But again, I also think the 49ers are playing games here too, and they don't want to send him where he wants to be. So stay tuned.
Jason Lockenfour, he's out at One Winning Drive. Hopefully they don't kick him out for revealing all this information.
Man.
But Jason, thank you for your time.
They might not let me back in. I'm trying to walk back in right now, but it may be a lost call.
PR is coming.
Yeah, we'll see you, around 5 o'clock?
Traffic permitting.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, Jen.
See ya. Coming up next, all the young dudes and the Orioles young dudes are hitting. Colton Cowser, Gunnar Henderson, Jackson Holliday, Adley Rutschman. Can we see this continuing? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackson Holliday pulled the hands in and yanks the curveball to deep right field, and it's gone. Well, Baltimore comes right back and answers, and now they lead 4-2. That is hit hard, deep right field, and that is gone. Goodbye. Two-out, two-run homer for Gunnar Henderson, 29th homer of the year. Here's a great play by Josh Naylor, but nobody's at the bag. It was stuck in his glove. And Santander will come home to tie the game. Wow! That extends Cowser's hit streak to 16 games, and it drives in a run.
Some highlights from Colton Cowser, Gunnar Henderson, Jackson Holliday, Adley Rutschman. Jackson Holliday, 3 straight multi-hit games. Colton Cowser now a 17-game hitting streak. Adley Rutschman seemed to be unlocked by the triple on Saturday. Had 2 hits and a sack fly on Sunday. And Gunnar hit his first home run since July 14th on Sunday. Can these guys keep this thing going?
Yeah, the O's had that extended stretch. I mean, what was it, a month of where just the offense and so many guys went ice cold during that stretch, and it was ugly baseball offensively, and we were just seeing some lackluster approaches from the plate, but boy, have they really turned it around, Ken. 77 runs scored over their last 12 games, so that's just under 6.5 runs per game. Only one game in that stretch of 12 in which they didn't score 4 runs. And it's even better with the 6.5 runs per game because O's are 49-6 this year when they score 5 runs or more. And you just look over the past couple of weeks especially. So last 15 days, Santander, 938 OPS. Cowser, over 1,000 OPS. Jackson Holliday, much shorter sample size, 1,200 OPS. Gunnar Henderson's OPS of over close to 900. Cedric Mullins over 800. I mean, they're starting to get everyone going at the same time. And that's why, look, does it frustrate you sometimes when this offense can go through some runs where they do feel like it can be a little feast or famine in terms of home run or bust? Sure. But ultimately, there's too much talent in this lineup, 1 through 9, for them to have been scuffling as hard as they were for as long as they were.
Here's the reality. Everybody slumps during a baseball season. I explain this all the time. That's why nobody hits 500. Like, best hitters hit 300. They're out 7 out of every 10 times. Unfortunately, what's happened with the Orioles in July is that everybody slumped at the same time.
Yeah.
And so you had this situation where it was just an absolute scuffle, but quietly, this Colton Cowser situation, he had 329 massive in July. And that's where the hitting streak started. But 329, OPS of 911, 4 home runs, 13 RBI, stole a couple bags. Like, this is a guy, and then once he moved to the leadoff role, it seemed to really get him going. And he's even, like, I was talking to Ben about this off the air. He works at bats differently in the leadoff hole that he did when he was down the count. Like, he's working counts deeper, fouling off balls, like, because that's his job, to sort of set the table. And even if he doesn't get on base, work some counts a little bit. Already in a quick sample size in August, batting 357, the OPS is 900. Like, I've been impressed with him so much.
Well, you look,
walking too.
Yeah, you look back to last year, Ken, where even when he was struggling in that initial run, he was still taking a lot of pitches.
He was almost too patient.
Yeah, he was taking a ton of pitches, and now that's kind of lending to this leadoff role, and the power's way back. And I mean, you just look at the lineup, right? Santander's been an absolute stud since June. Jackson Holliday, it's only been a handful of games, but the bar was so low because prior to him getting called up, they were 29th in baseball in on-base percentage out of their second baseman. Gunnar Henderson, you know, he was scuffling, especially immediately following the All-Star break, but now he's putting things together. And Mullins, and you mentioned Adley, where even, especially the last week or so, where maybe he wasn't getting the hits, but it was hard contact. It was just right at guys, and you expect that to turn. So now all of these guys, and then we bring up an Eloy Jimenez, who they just brought in. If he, not continuing the 5-for-9 pace or whatever it is, but if he can provide an impact in this lineup, and then you already have an O'Hearn, who you know he's going to give you a professional at-bat every time he's up there. So now the tide is turning where, you know, going up against left-handed starting pitching, is that still maybe a bit of a question mark? Sure, I'll grant you that, but I have a hell of a lot more concern with the back end of the bullpen than this lineup.
I loved what I saw from Adley on Sunday because everything seemed to be hard contact, and he seemed to have a plan, and he also seemed to be seeing the ball better. On June 27th, he was hitting 300. That batting average dropped 40 points in July. He's now batting 265. Like, it was such a funk, and everything seemed to be popped out or just missing completely. And it seems like that triple over Big Christmas's head seemed to unlock him.
For sure. And I think what we saw, especially at the tail end of that stretch, is we know how great plate discipline that Adley Rutschman has. You saw him chase he never swings at. Where, I mean, that's where it gets to the mental aspect of the game. You're pressing. You're trying to break out of it. But, yes, like you said, you hope that triple it seemed to get him going.
Coming up next here on the program, it's our weekly chat with Rita Hubbard. We'll talk Orioles. We'll talk Ravens. We'll get her thoughts on Russell Gage and on that offensive line, on the edge position, on the O's starting to hit. Rita joins us next here on The Fan. Orioles start a three-game set in Toronto tonight. Ravens back on the practice field as training camp continues. It's a perfect time to talk to our friend Rita Hubbard. And Rita, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate it. Let's start with the newest Raven. And this is one Bone predicted a few weeks ago when he's looking at deep cuts for wide receivers. But Russell Gage in the fold. Any thoughts on Russell Gage?
I mean, look, they could use some depth there. So, I think the more the merrier in that situation. And I hope that, you know, people don't like look too much into it, because we know that like Rashad Bateman got nicked up in practice, I think yesterday.
Yes.
But to me, this is more about depth than anything. So, you know, you welcome that type of situation. You want as many guys as you can to try to compete and see if you can put the best team on the field. So I like it.
Rita, we put out a poll on Twitter today, varying degrees of concern in the edge group and offensive line group. Which of those two do you have more confidence in?
I'd say the edge group, but not by much, right? And I say this because the offensive line had three new parts involved. That's 60% of the line. So for me, it's a numbers thing, right? And I just think that you do have Kyle Van Noy back, so that's something that you have to look forward to. And then, you know, you do have what you think of the potential of Owe as well as Ajabo. But for me, the offensive line, because there's so many new moving parts, I think to me that's at least I know who the guys are over there. And I know, well, not necessarily Ajabo. We mainly know his college record because he hasn't really played many snaps in the NFL. But, I mean, Owe has so far had an outstanding camp, it seems. We know what Kyle Van Noy can do. So I at least have some familiarity with what they have going on the pass rush side. I'm not by any means saying that I'm okay with them. Like, do I think that they could use some depth there? Sure. But I don't have, if it comes down to those two groups, at least I know who those guys are. These are a lot of new players, a lot of young players that they got in the draft. So that's the part that I think that is the biggest question mark. We don't know what the transition for them will be like in the NFL. And that's something that we just have to watch out for.
Talking to Rita Hubbard, it's Inside Access here on The Fan. Rita, first preseason game is Friday. It's a hate watch for all of us, but what will you be looking at when you watch the game Friday?
Biggest, I mean, two things we just talked about, right? Like, you know, what is your offensive line looking like? It feels like they're moving some stuff around. I saw that Ben Cleveland was going to be taking some snaps at center, which baffled me because there's a right guard position available. So, I mean, what is exactly that they're going to be doing on this offensive line? How they're going to go about doing that, I think I'm interested in. And, of course, who could potentially help with the pass rush? That's going to be, something that we could see or hopefully see from some young guys or some new guys as well. So, for me, those are the two things, the question that you asked me, the two things I think that we should be concerned about the most in terms of, you know, what the young guys are going to be able to do, because you got to assume that the majority of the vets aren't going to play. And if they do, they're not going to play a bunch of snaps anyway. So it's time for these young guys to get these reps in and see how they can contribute to their respective positions and how they can help this football team.
We're speaking to Rita Hubbard. It's Inside Access on The Fan. Rita, let's go to the O's. We didn't talk to you last week. You were having a nice vacation, but your thoughts on the O's trade deadline moves?
I'm not necessarily moved. I think I did go on with Glenn last week, and I told him, like, you know, I think I said C-. I'd probably just give it a C. I stand by that at this moment. I mean, you like what Jimenez has been able to do, because they do need a righty. So that's absolutely been something that they've needed, right? so far what we've seen for Rodgers,
it's one start.
I know, and so it's hard to say, right? Because, I mean, coming in, guys like Rodgers, guys like Eflin didn't have, like, the best resume, but we tried to give them some grace because of the teams that they came for. And obviously, Eflin came from Tampa, which at the end of the day, I mean, just a year ago, Tampa was a contender of sorts. So it's not, you know, that far off, but the situation with the Marlins is a little bit different, right? So, yes, it's only one start, but it wasn't a good one. So, you know, it's all playing itself out. I will say the Jimenez one, I think Eflin was solid, particularly in his last start, have been good. So hopefully they can change my mind on this fee. But I think they did what we thought that they would do. They weren't going to do anything splashy. And to be quite honest, a lot of teams necessarily didn't. There were a lot of teams that were looking for pitchers that, you know, essentially guys weren't trying to give those guys up. Not unless you were trying to get rid of the farm, your whole farm, and probably some other rights for those guys. So they did basically what we all thought that they would do. But also it's pretty consistent of what we saw other teams do around the league from a pitching perspective.
What do you think of Jackson Holliday the second time around?
Love it, man. I mean, sometimes, you know, people need a reset. And this was my issue with people wanting him to come on the opening day roster, guys, because I think sometimes we put pressure on these young players a little too prematurely, and it might affect, you know, their juju, their mojo, or whatever, because now they're overthinking it. You know, not only do they want to be good, but then, you know, you got the pressure of the media. You got the pressure of the fans. His dad was showing up every game until he had a hit. You know, that's a lot. You know what I'm saying? So now he had an opportunity to go back, do a hard reset. He's already played on the major league level. Now he can come up, and then he's a little bit more comfortable because, you know, he had already been up prior. And it's not the same as when he got called up the first time with the hype and, you know, all the hoopla about it. He was able to kind of, you know, slide in easily. And he has less pressure on him in terms of what he's able to do. And it's, to me, worked out perfectly. We saw it with, you know, Grayson last year when he struggled and he went down and came back up. And he's been, you know, here ever since. And so I expect the same from Jackson Holliday. I expect him to be a productive player because now the jitters and all have gotten out of the way, and now he can just focus on simply just playing baseball.
Rita, we talked probably a month or so ago at this point where you were saying that you were hearing on the streets that maybe the O's were talking about, contract negotiations with Anthony Santander wanting to extend him. Have you heard anything there? And also, if you're Mike Elias, if you're Ruby, would you look to extend Santander?
I mean, to my understanding, the consensus was that they would like to bring him back. I don't know if they started actually having a conversation about it, but that they were interested in bringing him back. And I understand why, you know what I mean? He's a guy that's been on this team for years, and he's been down there for the bad, with the good. They could probably use a little bit more veteran guys on this team. I would love Santander to come back. I don't necessarily know how that fits into the future of their roster, but I honestly don't care. That's not my problem to figure out.
Yep.
That's the Orioles' problem, because that's a good problem to have. You know what I mean? As slow as a start that he had prior to June, you know, since June, he's been, you know, on fire, and you want to keep that type of guy around, particularly because he knows the clubhouse well. He knows these guys well, and he's, you know, a contributor to what it is that they want to do, not only in regular season, in the long run. So I hope that happens for sure, because I'm a huge fan of Santander.
Rita, you and Glenn tonight?
Yep, 7:00. So we'll be talking, of course, more Orioles, more Ravens, getting ready for, you know, preseason ball. So tune in.
Awesome. Rita, always great. Thanks so much. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys.
Take care. Hey, coming up next, we want to hear from the people. 410-583-1057. We can talk Ravens. What are you looking forward to see Friday? And what do you think about the O-line and the pass rush as we get closer to the start of the regular season? We can talk O's, trade deadline in the rear view. Orioles in Toronto for a three-game set. 49-game sprint against the Yanks. They're tied for first place. How are you feeling about your Orioles? 410-583-1057. Also, the lineup is out. We'll get you that next here on The Fan. Practice just wrapped up at one winning drive. Good news. Harb says that Rashad Bateman landed on the football yesterday, so nothing serious there. But Arthur Millett, they said he's dealing with a knee injury. They don't know the severity yet. He did say it's not season-ending, but I hate when a coach says that.
Yeah, whenever you hear not season-ending in August, I week one sounds unlikely
but we'll see.
But yes, I mean, we'll still let this play out. But yeah, that definitely sucks to hear, because Arthur Millett, man, he's been one of those big-time standouts for the Ravens during training camp. And when Eric DaCosta brought him in, what, probably this time last year, you're wondering, gosh, the Steelers didn't even want Arthur Millett back with how their secondary was. But Millett, I mean, he was really, really good for them out of that nickel corner position and as a blitzer as well. So hopefully he doesn't miss a ton of time.
Odafe Owe sprained ankle. That's why he didn't practice today. 410-583-1057. We do want to hear from the people talking Orioles and Ravens. Orioles lineup is out. Colton Cowser leading off in center field. Anthony Santander batting second and right. Gunnar Henderson is at shortstop batting third. Ryan O'Hearn, he's batting fourth in left field.
Left field.
Adley Rutschman is the catcher batting fifth. Ryan Mountcastle, first base, batting sixth. Eloy Jimenez batting seventh at DH. Jackson Holliday is the second baseman batting eighth. And Ramon Urias is the third baseman batting ninth. No Kobe Mayo. So I immediately, when I saw this lineup, I went and looked at the Orioles career stats against Chris Bassitt. A lot of guys have some decent numbers, including Ramon, who's 3-for-4 lifetime with a home run and 2 RBIs. Gunnar Henderson, 4-for-7 lifetime, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs. Eloy Jimenez, 5-for-11 lifetime against Bassitt. Colton Cowser, 2-for-6. Adley Rutschman, 3-for-9. Ryan O'Hearn, 5-for-9 with a home run and 4 RBIs.
Yeah, Chris Bassitt, 3 starts against the Orioles as a member of the Blue Jays. It has not gone well for him at all. Just 13 innings. He's given up 17 runs, 5 homers. He's lost all 3 of those decisions.
By the way, and Ben just said in my ear, Blue Jays have decent numbers against Grayson as well, so he bet the over.
Okay. Yeah, Vladdy, I mean, granted, it's Vladdy, but Vladdy has an OPS of over 1,000 against Grayson.
By the way, Chase McDermott, right scapula stress reaction, being placed on the injured list for
going on there
at Norfolk. So we got a lot of stuff. Lot of stuff there, but Orioles do, as you mentioned, they hit Chris Bassitt pretty good.
Yeah, they hit Chris Bassitt really well. So you're hoping that this offense, which has been red hot recently, again, it's 77 runs over its last 12 games. You hope that they can kind of continue tonight. And then Grayson, I mean, how's he going to do tonight against the Blue Jays? And, you know, something that we're going to get into a little bit tomorrow is just the possibility where I feel like everyone's kind of assumed that, you know, Grayson would start game 2 in a playoff series, and he very well may, but could Zach Eflin be that guy?
Yeah. Well, Grayson's on pace still, I think.
Wins.
To be the Orioles' first 20-game winner since Mike Boddicker in 1984.
Unbelievable. And the crazy thing, and wins and losses record for a pitcher, we talk about that a lot. Corbin Burns, I mean, he's already tied his career high in wins.
Yeah. He never had a big win year. The year he won Cy Young the COVID year. Yeah. So it, obviously, it was a smaller sample size. I just hope Arthur Millett, like, that does sound ominous when a coach says not season ending.
Yeah. I mean, you're just hoping that he doesn't miss a ton of time. Now, that being said, if you're looking for a silver lining, it's coming at the Ravens' deepest position group, the cornerback position. And now this kind of begs the question, Marlon Humphrey, is he going to be forced inside during Arthur Millett's absence?
And was happening maybe anyway.
Well, sure. But I mean, you would have had the opportunity to maybe ease Nate Wiggins in early on in the season in terms of playing outside corner. But You know, now does that kind of press Nate Wiggins into action more on the outside, Marlon back in?
Let's try to grab at least one phone call, 410-583-1057. Jay's in Baltimore. Jay, you're on the Fan.
Good evening, gentlemen.
What's up?
What's the likelihood that we cut Josh Johnson or he gets moved to third string? I know it's preseason, he's throwing a lot of, practice, he's throwing a lot of interceptions. But what's the likelihood of one of the other quarterbacks becoming the actual backup to Lamar?
The guy's currently, yeah, appreciate it. The guy's currently there, highly unlikely. Josh Johnson, if nothing changes on the roster, is going to be the backup quarterback. Now, could they, after a week or two of seeing Josh Johnson, maybe seeing him in actual preseason games, decide they need to go outside and get somebody? We've been saying that for a while, Bone, but Leary or one of the other guys that is in camp, they're not taking this job.
Yeah, I would be shocked if someone currently on the roster takes the job. Now, I'm not firmly convinced, and you had it high in your six-pack.
Devin Leary, Emory Jones, they're not taking the job.
I'd be shocked. And you had it high in your six-pack yesterday, backup quarterback in terms of competition. I'm not convinced that the backup quarterback is presently on the roster right now. And I think we're going to find out a lot in, A, this first preseason game Friday, and it seems like there's going to be kind of crappy weather in Baltimore, a lot of rain, so that's going to kind of muddy up things as well. But if he struggles the first preseason game, the second preseason game, you wonder how proactive Eric DaCosta would be, because you go back to the Falcons, and Jason brought up Taylor Heinicke weeks ago. You would think that they're going to try hard to showcase him during the preseason to try and trade him come cutdown time.
Yeah, he's third string down there.
And he's making no money.
Yeah.
He's making no money.
Now, that's something to look for. But nobody on the roster currently is taking Josh Johnson's job. Hey, coming up next, we'll continue to talk Orioles. Dan Connolly covers the O's in Major League Baseball for Sports Keeda, and he joins us next here on The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.